Time to look behind the medical headlines, and our very own resident pharmacist Elizabeth Roddick joins us from New Life Pharmacy, live in the studio. Hello.
Hello, Simon.
And lots of good stories to get through today, as always. And the first one, if you're a migraine, or is it migraine or migraine?
You mean you say tomato and I say tomato, or whatever.
It's available. Or potato, potato.
It can actually be either.
Can it really?
Yeah, it can be.
Yeah, well, I like migraine.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't like it. I like the pronunciation. Is it pronunciation?
Pronunciation.
Right, okay. We're going to be here a long time, aren't we? Right, so there's a new drug. It shows promise for preventing migraines. So, first of all, what is a migraine?
It ranges from a moderate to severe headache. Your head usually throbs on one side. This can be accompanied by nausea. You could be sick. You're often sensitive to light or even sound.
So, how many people actually suffer with it? Because you do hear it quite a lot about it.
Yeah, it's quite common, about 1 in 5 women and about 1 in 15 men.
So there are different types of migraine, though?
Yes, there's something called an aura, and that's where you can be aware of signs such as flashing lights and you know you're about to experience a migraine headache. You can also have the headache without the aura and even have a type of silent migraine where there's an aura but no headache.
So, at the moment, I presume people are taking certain medications for it.
Yeah, the usual painkillers, Simon, paracetamol, ibuprofen. Just watch, take ibuprofen after food. It can cause problems with people, also with blood pressure. Just be aware of that, probably avoid it. There's also a family of medicines called triptans. Now, they seem to reverse the possible changes in the brain that we think occurs during a migraine. And of course, if you feel sick or are sick, there's a tablet, an antiemetic, which is placed under the top lip. And it's good because it dissolves there and releases the drug. And the good thing is, for example, if you were going to be sick, then that tablet will not, you know, will actually do its work, because, of course, when you're sick, sometimes you bring a tablet up.
Now, are the things that actually bring on triggers, as it were?
Yeah, generally having a healthy lifestyle in terms of a good sleep pattern, eating healthily, doing some regular exercise just helps in general. But certain types of food can trigger a migraine. Tyramine and cheese, chocolate, alcohol, caffeine, tea and coffee. Hormonal changes also can produce headaches. That's both at the menopause and during periods. Stress, anxiety, tiredness, jet lag, so many types of triggers, it's sometimes difficult to really pin down what's causing them.
So tell us about the research then.
It was a group of researchers from the UK, Sweden, Austria and the US, and they used the double-blind randomised controlled trial. Now that's the best type. That's where you check the drug against a placebo. And just under 1,000 adults who experienced at least 4 migraines a month took part. They recorded their migraines for 4 weeks in an electronic diary. They all had monthly injections of either a placebo or the drug Erenumab. That's what it was called. Of course, neither they or the researchers knew if they were actually being treated or not. Now, the results showed that those taking the drug reduced the number of migraines by approximately 50%. Now, what was interesting was the side effects from the placebo. Now, that was just water they were injecting, were equally reported as being a problem as the drug itself. And these were soreness at the site of the injection, colds, tiredness. Now, before we rush to introduce the drug to the treatment, first of all, it was just for 6 months, so the trial needs to be extended. And it didn't include people with chronic migraine. That's those who experience a migraine maybe 15 or more days a month. Thirdly, we need to be sure the drug is safe before widespread use. And of course, if all that criteria is satisfied, it still has to go through that NICE committee. That's the people that examine all the evidence and decide whether it can go into the NHS or not. So all in all, promising bit of research and reasonable outlook for this new treatment.
It's funny because I used to get migraine, well, I still do get migraine, but when I was younger, I got really severe migraine. Uh-huh. And sleep was the only thing that would get rid of it for me, or it seemed to be if I fell asleep and then I woke up, I would tend to feel better. But as I've got older, I still get them, but they're not as severe. I mean, at the times I had it where my sight would just disappear across one eye and work its way across. But as I've got older, I don't get it as severely, but I can have it rumbling on for like 3 or 4 days in the background, you know?
Yeah, I've heard of like youngsters growing out of it. So, and also changing the pattern, as you've experienced, Simon, that also happens.
Well, it could be that I'm not a youngster. There's no kid about it, eh? Right, moving on to, and this is a good time of year to be talking about this. Mindfulness training may help keep the weight off. Now, that's the problem, isn't it? We hear people with these yo-yo diets where you get the weight off and then it comes back and then it comes back with more.
Yeah, I was intrigued with this research because it's something most people can take part in. The research wasn't asking you to climb mountains or starve yourself, as often some of these things actually do when they say lose weight, do this, that and the next thing. So mindfulness, if you're aware of the term, and I know you've done some work on this radio station, it's being present. Many of us are certainly constantly worrying about what happened or indeed what might happen, instead of appreciating right now. Ourselves right now. It was a compilation of researchers who looked at previous data using mindfulness as a strategy for modifying eating patterns or helping weight loss. And the four outcomes were weight loss, eating behaviours, psychological outcomes and mindfulness. Although many of the participants lost more weight with conventional interventions such as diet, exercise, it was the mindfulness group that were found to have kept the weight off, and that's the key. It helped with obesity-related behaviours. I'm sure you've heard of comfort eating or binge eating due to psychological problems, but it was really only the continued weight loss rather than effects on eating behaviour that was the main result from the research. What we can say is that mindfulness may help maintain weight loss, but of course, the same messages come out, Simon, as usual. Eating healthily, exercising regularly, these are the things that definitely work. But I'm interested in mindfulness because, as I say, it's something that we can all do.
Mm-hmm. And if you've tried mindfulness, we'd love to hear what your experiences are. It's radio@rnib.org.uk, or you can just head to our website and drop us a line. Now, it's actually quite a nice lead on here because there was a report out, I think it was last week, and it says that 1 in 4 nurses in England are obese.
Yeah, it was a publication looking at body mass index in health professionals, and normal level somewhere between 18.5, 24.9, and that is different for men and women. And the researchers from Edinburgh and London wanted to compare healthcare workers with other sector workers. They looked at nurses against other healthcare professionals, unregistered care workers, and also non-healthcare occupations, and they were aged between 17 and 65. They found that compared with nurses, the odds of being obese were 48% lower for other healthcare professionals. The odds of being obese were 46% higher for unregistered care workers, and that was interesting. The researchers suggested there were worrying statistics because the prevalence of sickness, if you're obese, then you're off more often, you've got painful joints, you may have mental health and other healthcare issues. But the researchers felt the main causes were the fact that healthcare workers often have to work at non-sociable hours, shift patterns that we know can affect people's health. Maybe the NHS and healthcare policy workers need to be looking at health. How can we help these people? Maybe perhaps improve their health outcomes, looking at the shifts they have to do. I think we all need our nurses, do we not?
Okay, I think we'll hear more on that as time goes on. And changing tack for something completely different. This is quite an interesting one, this one. Why brushing your teeth could reduce your risk of throat cancer by more than a fifth?
First of all, Simon, the research was about esophageal cancer. Now, rather than throat cancer, so the headline was a bit misleading. The esophagus, that's the tube that runs from your mouth down into your stomach. It carries the food down after you've chewed it. Now, nearly 9,000 people are diagnosed with this type of cancer every year. So any research helping to prevent this is really, really welcome. It was a US study looking at factors such as bacteria in the mouth and whether this could increase the risk of cancer. The researchers analysed saliva samples and compared those with people who got the disease against those who were free from the cancer. People with double the amount of a bacteria called Tanarella forsythia. Now, I'm not sure if that's the correct pronunciation. You might correct me, Simon.
That sounds okay.
They were those that had a 20% increased risk of esophageal cancer if you had this type of bacteria in the mouth. And from the research, we don't know if people already had gums disease or had GORD. Now, that's gastroesophageal reflux disease. That's where acid comes up from the stomach into the mouth. What we definitely can see is brushing your teeth. As you get older, keeping your gums healthy is such an important component of overall good health. Your own dentist, hygienist will be able to give you the very best advice for your mouth. Using the right thickness of those interdental brushes, that's the tiny brushes that remove food and that plaque, sticky bacteria that can cause gum disease. That gets stuck between the teeth and the right type of mouthwash as well, they can recommend that. So whether that will prevent cancer, we really don't know, but certainly stopping smoking and keeping your gums healthy, we know will improve your health.
And it can also, as I say, infections and gums can lead to heart trouble years on as
yeah,
well,
don't we're now finding all sorts of things that are, you know, if you look at the prevalence of gum disease and the incidence of, as you say, other diseases like heart disease as well. Yeah, there's definitely a link.
Thank you for that. If you've got any questions on anything we've covered or something has been triggered by some of the subjects here or something completely different and you'd like to get in touch, you can drop me a line or you can get in touch with Elizabeth at New Life Pharmacy.
All the W's, newlifepharmacy.co.uk.
Elizabeth, always a pleasure. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks very much, Simon.